You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. This show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And boy, do I have a lot of friends. I have a lot of friends all over the world. And my good friend Ellen Little is here. She's co-hosting with me as usual. Thank you.
Happy Monday.
You're such a good friend.
Happy July. Thank
you. I can trust you. And not everyone has a friend they can trust.
Amen. Right back at you, sister.
I respect and trust you immensely.
Yes.
We have Pastor Paul, who's running our board for us. Quite happy to be blessed he is to be on our show today. And we have our good friend Jerry Blanco is here with us. She was recommended to come on our show by our friend Brenda. Yes. And this
From
was
last
great.
Week's show.
Yeah, we were able to get Jerry on the show because somebody else, you know, they canceled and then they wanted to come back on and we couldn't do it. So we'll move that person. And Jerry is seeking re-election for council member, District 4, City of Cocoa. So welcome to our show.
Thank you so much and thank you for having me today.
Yeah, and it's going to be a fun, unscripted, very educational show today, Ellen.
Yes. As always.
As always.
Yeah.
That's what I tell people who ask me about a show. Sometimes people say, well, what is your show about? And I say, well, it's a talk show. It's an interview type show. We don't really have like one topic that we talk about. Some shows do music and some talk about entertainment. But we actually talk about issues that are near and dear to people as they go about their everyday life.
That's right.
Sometimes we speak about things, civil rights, voting restoration, how to get voter turnout. We talk about gun violence reduction. We talk about reforming the criminal justice system, which is our topic today. Mm-hmm. And also accountability amongst elected officials, which I have to tell you, sometimes I don't think a lot of them are held accountable after election because then most of them start working on re-election.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So this weekend, I went to the Leadership Blue, which is the Florida Democratic Party has their largest fundraiser, I should say. And it was very nice. They had caucuses for disability, minorities, labor, just about everything, economic development, just about everything. So it was a really nice Leadership Blue conference, I have to say. And a banquet. We also had a banquet. And we had the governor from the state of, I want to say, Washington. Ainslie was his name.
Mm-hmm.
He was there. Gave a really good speech about unity and peace and standing up for what you're believing. And, of course, Senator Nelson was there. I had a good chat with him. He does want to come on our show, which is great.
So can anybody go to that? Anybody that's interested, right?
Of course.
Is that the diplomat?
Yes. If you're interested and you can afford the ticket for the dinners, which are a little bit pricey, and you have to stay at a hotel or you could stay at another hotel. Most people just come for one day and leave. But for me, I work a couple extra shifts so that I could attend. And then I have the husband give a little change towards
right,
that as
to
well.
To get you over there, right?
Yeah, because I happen to believe in the things, you know, equality and opportunity and justice and respect.
But a lot of our listeners probably don't even realize that they can participate in those types of things. Just like the caucuses that happen here, we want to make sure that everybody stays involved as much as possible. Much as you can.
And the thing is, it doesn't really take much to get involved in your community. You just have to love your community.
Right.
And you have to love the idea that if you have children and grandchildren, you want to leave this world a better place than you found it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stay engaged and you know what's going on, you feel like you're part of the solution. You know, a lot of people, they don't even vote. I told you I was speaking to someone this morning who's a naturalized citizen, and a lot of her family members are not registered to vote. And that kind of irks me when, you know, people are not registered to vote because so many people died to give us that right. And also, if you're using the roads and the 911 system and the public schools and, you know, you're using the institutions that people fight for, you should at least vote. We don't tell you how to vote. But you should read up about the issues because it does affect us.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
Right. Economic development, people complain about the roads, but they don't get involved. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why.
And just so you know, if you complain to CETA or I and we ask you if you voted and you say no, the complaining stops because we walk away.
That's right.
Because yeah. It's over then at that point. There's nothing to complain about if you didn't vote.
And you know, life itself is so beautiful. Just the idea that we're alive and well and we're healthy. There are so many people that have lost the ability to speak or to walk or to eat or to think or to even breathe. They're breathing with the help of oxygen and, you know, respirators and stuff. And so those of us that have all these awesome senses that was given to us, right? It's a gift. We should use it for common good. Amen. For the good of everyone. So I was watching CNN last night and they were talking about the jails. And I tell you, it is, I was so concerned because so many people end up in jail for simple things like a bad check or they got evicted or maybe they had some weed or whatever. But then the court cost is high. They can't pay the cost, so they end back up in jail. When they do end up coming out, they go to community where they're meeting the same people that they were getting in trouble with from before. So it's like a never-ending
vicious cycle,
right? So I was thinking if it's $30,000 a year to lock someone up and pay for their health care and meals and, you know, for their lodging, why not invest in the communities, invest in education? Find out if you sit down and speak with some of these people, like the director of the documentary last night, it puts you in tears because a lot of these people will lack in guidance and mentors and people to hold them by the hand and say, this is how it's done. Whether it's your family or your church or elders or whatever it is, I think at some point we have to start being kind and nice to each other.
Well, and when you grow up in that environment, sometimes you just don't know any other way.
Right.
And that's where the reform comes in, that I congratulate the people of Chicago. I think I told you about it. One of the trips that I came back from, the entire top floor of the Chicago Library was talking about how the citizens took their streets back and took the responsibility of making sure that it wasn't going to happen on their street, wasn't going to happen in their town.
And they still have a high level. They still have a high percentage of gun violence, but
sure.
They're trying. The thing
but
is, they're trying.
They're making an effort. Yeah, exactly right.
And you know, the USA is the largest. We have the most incarceration in the world.
Yeah.
And so and then of course it leads to a bigger question. Well, who's profiting from this, right?
Right.
Who's profiting from the type of beds they make, the type of iron, the type of metal, the type of, you know, who's benefiting from the laundry services, the food services, the janitorial services? Are we benefiting from locking people up and putting them behind bars and taking them away from their communities and their families and their children when they could be productive? Because once they go to prison and come out, if you people don't give them a second chance, a lot of these people can't find work. How can you even drive a car if you can't pay the insurance or if you don't have somewhere to live? I mean, so it's like you said, it's a vicious cycle.
Right. And we've even had guests on the show that talked about restoring voting rights for felons.
And you know,
those are just simple.
The
you know,
restoration
simple things
of
that
rights
we should be looking at.
That's on the ballot, and yeah. I think most people are voting for that. And so, you know, the bigger issue is there are some people that says, well, don't get involved in drugs, don't get involved in violence, don't steal, don't lie, don't cheat. But sometimes you're just targeted for who you are, the color of your skin, who you're with, your community, the way you look. And so I was very happy that my friend Thomas Kennedy and others spoke at the Democratic meeting on Sunday, and they talked about passing a resolution that the candidates in the Florida Democratic Party would not accept funds from lobbyists or people who actually support the private prisons.
And he sounds like a real interesting guy. He was living as an undocumented immigrant, this Thomas Kennedy that you met,
mm-hmm.
For over a decade. And he saw the daily struggles of what he and his parents had gone through in order to have a better life. So he became involved in a student activism and immigration reform even at a young age.
Right.
He graduated from the International Relations major from Florida International University. And he works with the Florida Immigrant Coalition. So
right.
That must have been a great...
Right, and it was a critical step. It was a critical step by passing the resolution committed to refuse donations from private prisons and all PACs and lobbyists affiliated with private prisons, And they were encouraging the Democratic candidates to do the same.
Right.
Which, you know, we all talk about things, but sometimes we don't do it. So it was kind of nice to see that somebody was actually taking the time to do it. And it, I think they so in some cases, people often, you know, you'll see on Facebook, you'll see articles written, but you don't really see that people actually follow up on it. And these young people, they actually followed up on it. So I was pretty happy about that. And I know Jerry had something to say about that too. Jerry, you were saying that you saw a documentary and you thought it would be very interesting for our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and friends who are interested in prison reform to look at that.
It's a Netflix documentary. It's called 13. And I believe the director, you pronounce her name, Ava DuVernay. She's a very well-known director out of Hollywood, but it's a very eye-opening documentary on the prison system and just how much of a money machine it is. And like you were referencing, like with the foods, you know, who provides the food, everything that's inside the prison system itself.
It's a business.
It's a business.
Yes.
All the way down to their phone cards. How they call their family members.
Yeah, I was watching that, and it was saying that it's a company that makes such a profit of the telecommunications, and the prisoners don't have a choice because this is the one that the contract is with.
Exactly.
Sometimes I hate that word contract. I mean, people should have choice. Isn't it weird that they want choice and everything else but that kind of stuff, right? Yes. So anyway, so Jerry, yes, I will look that up on Netflix. And what it's called again?
13.
13. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think, Ellen, you really gave Thomas a good shout-out there reading his whole bio, and that was nice. He's on the phone now.
He is on the
phone. Hi, Mr. Thomas Kennedy, who is not related to the Kennedys that I absolutely love, but he's calling in anyways. How are you? Thank you for calling in today on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here in sunny Cocoa, Florida on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7. FM 99.9 and FM 100.7. We've got to give our station a shout out when we can. So, Thomas, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to call in on our show today.
Yes, how are you today?
We are doing really good. Ellen and I are sitting here with our friend Jerry Blanco, who's also running for office. She's running for re-election. And I was pretty pleased with what you guys did with that resolution. If you would be so kind to tell our listeners, how did you get involved with not just a resolution, but with the Florida DEC?
Sure. So, you know, I was formerly undocumented, and I got involved in activism that way. I currently work for the Florida Immigrant Coalition, which is a statewide organization fighting for the rights of immigrants and really all people in Florida. After 2016, I was one of the founding members and founding chair of the Miami-Dade Democratic Progressive Caucus, which I'm no longer the chair due to my responsibilities with the Florida Immigrant Coalition. But yeah, we've long held the position that private prisons and the profiteering off of human liberty is immoral and wrong, and we've led efforts to divest from that industry in various fields. And yesterday we passed a resolution at the Florida Democratic Party Executive Committee that would basically ban all private prison money and all lobbyist and PAC-affiliated money with that industry from being in the coffers of the FDP.
Yeah, well, thank you for doing that because, you know, we were just talking about that. CNN had a documentary last night, and, you know, I was watching it, and $30,000 they were saying it cost to house one inmate. And here I was thinking, why don't we just invest in more education, invest in our communities, invest in people before that happens to them?
Yeah, absolutely. And we actually, with the Dream Defenders, which is another civil rights organization in Florida, you know, the Florida Immigrant Coalition and the Dream Defenders actually are pushing something called the Freedom Pledge.
Yes.
Which is basically asking candidates and elected officials to also divest from private prison money and to make sure that if they have taken any of that money, that it be divested to community and social resources to actually better our communities rather than spend money in imprisoning people indefinitely for profit.
And also, one of the statements in the resolution, it says that private prison companies have poured millions of dollars into our political system in order to grow their political influence in Florida. How can we stop that? Where are we losing the message that the voters, they just don't know this?
Yeah, so, you know, current Governor Rick Scott, who is challenging, Senator Bill Nelson for his seat, has actually taken more money than any politician in Florida from GEO Group, which is a private prison company. He has taken over $718,000 of those $180,000 just in 2018. But, you know, there's Democrats like Lauren Book, for example, in Broward, her dad is a main lobbyist for GEO Group in Florida, and she has also taken money and facilitated the operations for this industry in Florida. So it is a problem that is pervasive in our political system. But, you know, this is how we combat it, right? By leading efforts to divest, by calling on institutions to not take this money, by voting with our dollars, you know, and not supporting candidates that take this money or support this industry, by really advocating on this issue on all fronts.
Yeah, and also, you know, the documentary talked last night about the private prison companies who have an profit incentive to promote policies that will increase mass incarceration, which is systematically decimating communities of color. How can we help? I mean, that's a situation that I'm a minority myself. I'm a naturalized citizen. I'm an immigrant. And I have spoken with so many people that either wants to come on our show or wants us to address certain issues. And that is an issue about mass incarceration of people of color.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, there's a reason why the private prison industry and GEO supported Donald Trump overwhelmingly in the 2016 election. The Obama Department of Justice, Barack Obama's Department of Justice, had actually started to scale back the use of these private detention centers, and their stock had tumbled down in terms of profits. And the Trump administration actually reversed that policy. The best way to combat this industry is by getting involved, seeking out organizations like the Dream Defenders, like the Florida Immigrant Coalition, looking for candidates that are going to take a clear and firm stand against this industry, that are not taking any money or not beholden to them, doing the work of organizing the infrastructure so that we can win elections and put people that are going to represent our communities and not represent these companies in office. We are seeing policy become stagnant in Congress at the state and federal level. And we really need to take governing power to make an impact.
Well, for those of us that, we read, we watch TV, we look at the documentaries like Jerry and I were talking about, mass incarceration disproportionately and unjustly impacts communities of color, right? So where are we losing our message that more people are not outraged by this?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Not only does it affect, people in the United States, the African American community, brown communities here in the United States, but you know, a majority of immigrants that are currently in detention are actually detained in for-profit prisons, and they're detained in for-profit prisons for a long time because these companies have an incentive to keep them there, right?
Yes.
We basically, you know, we need to do more work in organizing people, in getting the message out, in supporting things like Amendment 4, which will restore voting rights to over 1.5 million Floridians who have been disenfranchised from voting effectively for a lifetime because of prior felony convictions. You know, people have served their time in Florida, don't get their rights to vote restored. That's something that will help bring equity in democracy and will allow communities of color to vote. You know, one out of four black citizens in Florida can't vote because of this, because the criminal injustice system predominantly targets them. So it's really just about getting involved and doing the work. You know, there's no, like, silver bullet to fix the issue. It's just, you're just going to have to do the hard work.
Well, you know, Ellen and I often talk on our show about leading by example, right? And those of us that assume a leadership role in something, we try to get other people to follow suit. How do we get more naturalized citizens who were immigrants at one point and came in and then they became a naturalized citizen, now they're an American? How do we get more people to register to vote and actually pay attention to the issues that are not just affecting them and their household, but their communities as well?
You know, so the Florida Immigrant Coalition actually has a program to naturalize citizens. We run a citizenship clinic. So if you're listening and you need to, you know, become a citizen or know somebody that does, just please go to floridaimmigrant.org and you know, reach out to us. But I think, you know, we also run voter registration programs, you know, in counties all across the state. And it's, you know, and they're both paid and volunteer. And it's really just, like I said, just about getting out there, you know, getting sweaty and doing the work of talking to people, registering them to vote, talking about the issues, you know, urging them to get involved, really agitating them about the urgency of the current moment. And, yeah.
So, Thomas, we're talking to Thomas Kennedy. And, Ellen, you could tell our listeners a little bit about who he is. Don't hang up, Thomas. We just want to give a shout-out to your quick couple sentences about you.
Actually, and, sure. And again, he's talked about being an immigrant and that he became involved in student activism and immigration reform advocacy. He graduated with an international relations major from Florida International University, and he works at the Florida Immigrant Coalition. So, and again, thank you for all your work.
He's a busy guy. So how do we get more accountability from our elected officials? Because we were talking earlier, so many people get elected into office. They say the right words. They have code words that they use. They know how to gin up their base. They know how to do these things. And then they get elected, and now it's all about re-election. How do we actually hold people to what they say?
You got to hold them accountable. You know, show up to their events, talk to them. And then, you got to escalate if they don't listen, if they're doing things that are actively harming their community. You know, get them on video, highlight their hypocrisy, you know, canvass against them. And if it's necessary, primary them. You know, primary them and try to move them. You know, if you won't beat them in a primary, at least you'll move them to the left. At least you'll scare them. But, you know, it's really just challenging them through direct action and also through electoral means.
So when you guys decided to put this resolution forward, what was the driving force behind this, besides the idea that people can profit from private prisons? Were you guys looking at what happens to people when they come out from after incarceration? They can't find a job. They're dehumanized. People just don't have the assistance that they need to find a job, get affordable housing, help their families. What was the driving force that made you and everybody else who worked on this say, this is something we're going to bring forth to the Florida Democratic Party?
You know, so we've all, you know, that worked on, you know, the Dream Defenders and the Florida Immigrant Coalition and the allies that helped us. We all had done work around, you know, immigration detention and criminal justice and, you know, specifically private prisons. You know, was really one of the leading organizations against an effort to build a private immigration detention center in Southwest Ranches a couple of years ago, and we defeated that. So, you know, we've been in a long standing battle against this industry, and you know, we've led efforts to sort of divest and boycott this industry. But, you know, it really came from the pledge that the Dream Defenders wrote that I spoke about earlier,
yes.
Calling on politicians to divest from this industry. And we had, you know, a couple of high-profile names signing it. You know, we had State Senator Annette Tadeo, Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Rep. Shereen Jones, Rep. Carlos Guillermo Smith. So we and others, all four Democratic gubernatorial candidates. So we really felt that we had some momentum, and we're like, why don't, you know, we worked with Juan Cuba, the chair of the Miami-Dade Democrats, to just sort of speed up the process and just sort of make it a statewide resolution at the Florida Democratic Party. And I'm not going to lie to you.
Did you have any pushback? Did you have any pushback yesterday at the meeting? I wasn't there for the meeting, but I was driving home, and then I saw it on Facebook, and I was like, wow, this was awesome. Did you guys have any pushback on that?
I'm not going to lie to you. And I'm also not going to name any names, but yes, we did. We had a lot of pushback. You know, what was supposed to be an hour meeting became a 2.5 hour meeting, with like almost 2 hours of those being spent on this item alone. And, you know, it basically devolved into a parliamentary Roberts Rules battle to try to get this amendment passed, this resolution passed. And it was tough, but we did have, you know, some in leadership gave us a pushback, but we did have the overwhelming support of the members of the executive committee and strong support from some of the leadership. And, you know, I'm really, really happy to say that the resolution pulled through in the end. And I actually think that, you know, aside from it being the right thing to do, I do think that the Florida Democratic Party will actually be stronger for it.
I don't think people benefiting from men and women locked in cages is a great idea. I think what we need to do as a society is try to make it so that people don't end up behind cages and don't dehumanize people and try to stop all the hate and divisive nature that we have right now in our nation. Well, before you go, we have a remaining couple of seconds. I know everyone is talking about what's happening on the borders. And are you guys trying to do any of the activists, were they down there at the borders trying to see if they could meet with anyone to see if we can help those children and parents to be united? I tell you, I was looking at my grandchild. My daughter-in-law is from Puerto Rico, and I watched the love that she gave to a little grandson when he's swimming, to take him out of the pool, wrap him in a blanket, take care of my granddaughter. And I'm thinking, as this is happening yesterday, we were watching them swim at the Century Country Club. I'm thinking, how many mothers don't have that opportunity to put a blanket or a towel around her child, because they're being detained and then they're being separated? So, I mean, at some point, our humanity, our compassion for people need to kick in, right?
Absolutely. And, yeah, you know, we've done a lot of advocacy. You know, like a week and a half ago, we met on a roundtable with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and urged her to take leadership on this issue, which she did. We were one of the organizers of the Homestead March in front of the reopened Children's Detention Center. We did an action outside of a GEO Group private prison in Broward. We organized another march in downtown Miami. So we've been, you know, agitating people around this issue and trying to basically organize.
I think as long as you do it with peace and, you know, nobody gets hurt. And the other thing is, I always say that I'm from, you know, the Caribbean. I'm from Trinidad and Tobago. And I always say that we need to look at foreign policy as well, and look at why people are fleeing violence, why there's so much gang violence, why people don't have any economic and social stability. Because it's not only about leaving your country and trying to find a way into another country, but people leave for reasons. And, you know, my mother used to say, no one leaves a good marriage, no one leaves a great job, no one will leave a country that's helping them to have economic opportunity and survival for their families. So oftentimes, I think we also have to hold governments all over the world accountable for how they treat their citizens as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, and a lot of these people that are coming here, you know, they're trying to surrender themselves at the ports of entry. They're being denied, against the law, the ability to do so. You know, they're being denied their rightful and opportunity to seek asylum and go through that process. And even people that have, you know, crossed the border without authorization, they're being detained indefinitely, separated from their children. People that have, you know, fleeing desperate situations, desperate, you know, economic uncertainty, violence.
And a lot of them are skilled. A lot of them have... some of them were doctors and lawyers and engineers, and they owned businesses, and they had to flee because of violence. And I always say to people, you know, just imagine sometime when we have a heavy rain and thunder and lightning, our children, our grandchildren, they're scared. They look, the first thing they want to do is, where's mommy? Where's daddy? They want you to hold their hand. Can you imagine those little children coming across the border and having to stay in a detention center away from their mothers and fathers with complete strangers, changing their diapers, making their food. I think, you know, at some point people have to start looking at this and saying it's a humanitarian crisis. And we as human beings who are alive right now on Earth, we need to do something about it and make sure that people are treated with respect. I think the most important thing is respect for human life.
Yes, I agree 100%.
Well, and Thomas,
that's not what's driving our immigration policy right now. It's what's driving it is meanness and harshness, and you know, just literally being as punitive and
a lot of fake news
to other human beings.
Well, it's a lot of fake news because a lot of people think that they're coming here to take my job, and that's not true. I see Ellen giving me the wrap up that we need
to wrap up. Thomas Kennedy, thank you so much for calling in. We'll be watching for you and all the great things that you're doing. Thank you so much for calling in. But we're going to hear from our sponsors real quick here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we'll be right back right after these few words.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haulaway available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on WWBC AM. I almost said 1510, but it is 1510.
It is.
Yeah.
I'm right, like, way to go.
Gee, we've been on radio too long.
Yes, we have.
And
not
we're
too
all,
long, just enough.
We're also on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Our show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Ellen and I do this every Monday. It's fun. It's unscripted. We don't have a script. We just talk about, we give out valuable information to our listeners, whether it is to vote, open a business, if you want to go on a vacation, if you want to read a book, you want to, whatever it is you want to do. We even talk to our nonprofits. We were talking about the Boys and Girls Club. We do a lot of fun stuff in this show.
We do. And you know what? I'm so excited about this week, Sita, because you and I are hosting a gala on Friday the 7th. Friday the 7th?
Saturday the 7th of July.
Right, for the Bacasca event, which is the Brevard Caribbean and Sports Association.
Yes, yes, you got it, Cultural Association.
Cultural Association,
very
good. But they also have a MLK, a Martin Luther King program and breakfast.
The gala.
Okay.
Just remember you're talking about the gala because you're going to be the token person to go up there and talk about calypso and reggae.
That's right, I am.
Yes.
I am. I'm so excited.
And so we still have tickets left. We just wanted to say we were hoping to get about 200 people. And right now our count is about 175. So if anyone is interested, they can go on Facebook and they can send a private message to Bacasca, or they can call Ellen and I. You can call me at 271-6740. I am on the committee for this.
Excellent.
And now our second segment is with our friend Jerry Blanco. I like your name. It's so easy to say.
It's actually Blanco.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she is seeking re-election for the council member for the City of Cocoa District 4. So, Jerry, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to seek re-election. And unlike other people, you do care. I can tell.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you for having me on today, especially at such short notice. I was appointed to the council back in October of 2016. There was a vacancy due to an unfortunate and untimely passing of former council member Tyler Furbish. So rather than having a special election, which would have cost the voters of the city thousands of dollars, the council decided at that time to just have individuals come before the council, present a resume, and tell them basically why you felt like you were the person to fill that vacancy. So there were actually three of us that the council interviewed, and they unanimously appointed me, and I was very honored for that appointment. And ever since, I have just devoted myself to immersing myself in learning everything I can about the operations of the city, its day-to-day functions, and just representing the residents of Cocoa, this District 4, getting out there, doing community watch meetings, attending social events throughout the city. It was recently at Juneteenth, which was a very large event that we had over at the Harry T. and Harriet T. Moore Center in Cocoa. And it's just being a part of the community, getting out there and meeting your constituents.
Right. And that's why shows such as Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is so important to get the word out, not just about things here in Brevard, but around our state as well. And for our listeners who are tuning in, Jerry is pretty qualified. She's the current deputy mayor for the city of Cocoa, a city council member in District 4, a board liaison on planning and zoning for the city of Cocoa, board member for the Space Coast TPO.
TPO.
What does that stand for?
That's the Transportation Board.
Oh. Mm-hmm. You learn on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right? It looks, you know, being a nurse, you know, it looks like an abbreviation for something I use in nursing.
Exactly.
And for a minute,
and we don't want to know that.
Yeah, my nursing, my nursing cap just went automatically on my head because TPN, you know, it's something we use. And also you're on the board of directors for the Economic Development Commission, which we were talking about earlier about getting our communities revitalized to help the prison, what's going on with from the high school to prison, right? And you're also a board member of the CDBG.
Brevard County CDBG,
mm-hmm.
that's correct, since 2014.
And you're a licensed realtor since 1997.
Mm-hmm.
You're married, you have one adult daughter, one grandchild, and like me, you want to leave the world a better place than we found it.
I would love to leave the world a better place than we found it.
And we're going to start in Cocoa.
Yes.
That's right. Well, we're gonna start in your own backyard.
That's what they say. Isn't that what President Obama said when he left office? Just stay engaged in your community.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you live in India, or if you live in Trinidad, if you live in Jamaica, if you live in the United States, wherever you live, that's where the good Lord planted your 2 feet. Do something, right? Just don't sit there and complain. So, Jerry, is this your first run for office? And if so, when did you decide to run and for what seat?
No, actually, I ran in 2010 for the same seat for District 4, City of Cocoa Council. And there was a very unusual election that year. There were actually four of us that were running for the same seat, which from my understanding was the first time that it happened in the city of Cocoa in, you know, anyone's memory for years. There were two women, two men, which was kind of interesting as well. And I actually came in second, so I lost that race that year to Tyler Furbish. We ran a very clean campaign. I think that after it was all over and said and done, I called him up and congratulated him, and he and I became friends from that point on. Because my attitude was, you know, whatever I can do to help you help my city is where I want to be, because I didn't have any harbor any resentment from him winning the election. The voters spoke. So, you know, over the years, you know, we would get together and bring
storm. So you're what we call a good sport.
Yes, I
and
believe
a good citizen.
I am.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. She just didn't sit there and go negative.
Well, and you know,
and
he
feels sorry for herself.
When I called him and congratulated him on his win, the next day he said, "You know, you're the only one who has called me and said congratulations." So he really appreciated
that. Speaks volumes
that,
about your character,
you know?
Too.
So, but no, we did become friends after that, and we would meet on occasion, have coffee, and just sit down and brainstorm, talk about ways that we could help Cocoa. And I supported him 100% because he did a great job. When he ran for re-election in 2016, just prior to meeting, oh, I'm sorry, not 2016, 2014, just prior to that, we met again, and he asked me if I was going to run against him, because he knew I was still very interested in running. And I said, you know, at this time, I'm very happy with what you've done, and I'm going to support you, and I'll continue to do so. But I will run again when your term is up, which would be this year.
You had your eyes set on that.
Exactly.
Your heart and your eyes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So with all, you know, like a lot of people ask me too, because, you know, I'm running as a state representative, District 52. And it's an uphill battle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people say, oh my God, why do you want that headache? Why do you want to run for office? But for some of us, we enjoy meeting people and we want to do something different for citizens, right? So what was the driving force for you to say, I'm going to run again?
Well, you know, it's interesting you brought that up. I had a constituent even ask me that question recently, because I had to meet with them and try to resolve an issue they were having at their residence. And they were like, why do you do this? You know, and you can't be it's not the money. You can't be making any money.
It's certainly not the money.
No. And I said, no, sir. I said, I truly feel like it's a role of a public servant. It's what we are. And you have to have the commitment and the compassion to serve, because it's a thankless job in a lot of ways. But if your compassion and your commitment is there, the reward comes back to you.
It's like my friend Ellen says, you have to have thick skin to run for office.
Well, thick skin and a warm heart.
Yeah.
You have to have both.
That's a good way to put it.
So, yeah. So Jerry, for District 4 in Cocoa, the seat you're seeking, what are your top priorities if elected?
Well, I have several, of course. Primarily would be growth and development. Cocoa has made so much progress in this last 6 years under the leadership of the Mayor Henry Parrish and the current council, but there's so much more that needs to be done. And, you know, we need to encourage growth in having companies, tech companies in particular, light manufacturing, come into our city, offer jobs to our citizens that pay more than a minimum wage, so that parents can have a decent income and a career, not just a job, but a career.
Right. We want to see jobs with benefits, with good benefits. Right,
and there are companies out there that have good paying jobs with good benefits. And with us being close proximity to the space program, we would be a perfect fit for tech companies to come in.
And close to Orlando.
Exactly.
You know, all the tourist attractions. Ellen and I just finished reading all the great things that happens with the arts community and why people move to Brevard.
Yeah, the Brevard Cultural Alliance,
and why they move to Orlando. I mean, it's a good fit, right? Mm-hmm. So, and so what are your campaign strategies to win this seat? Do you have an opponent?
I do currently have an opponent, yes.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. then we have to double up on your efforts, right?
So working hard, yes.
Yeah, so what are your campaign strategies? I know, I should tell myself that.
Right. Listen,
I'm going all over the place.
Well, of course, you know, the first thing you do is you get organized, you get a campaign manager, which I have a very experienced campaign manager that I'm very thrilled to have working for me. I'm also engaged a IT and social media manager because I do believe in using social media to its full advantage. As a realtor, I'm used to using social media to promote myself as a realtor and my listings and so forth. And so for me, it's a nice, easy fit to utilize that as well.
And it's not expensive.
It's really not.
It's just time consuming.
It's time consuming. So you need someone who has the expertise and the knowledge that it takes, you know, to make sure that you have the right presence on the internet.
Yes. The right reasons.
And for the right reasons.
Yes.
Of course. And of course, and you know, I will do the traditional method of campaigning. I'll do the mailers, you know, and then I'll be doing the door to door as well. So that, because.
But you know, in this heat, like a lot of people keep asking me to knock on doors, it is too hot.
It is very hot.
You're
going to
end up in the hospital with dehydration. And an IV, if you're not careful.
But, you know, Zita, I have done it. I did it in my original campaign back in 2010, and I met so many wonderful people out there in the neighborhoods that are in my district. And that truly is still the one way to get to know people and to let them get to know you as a candidate and as a person.
Right. And also, when you attend events, too, you meet a lot of nice people.
Absolutely.
At these events. Like you were saying, you went to that event earlier yesterday. I find that people just come up to you and they want to know why you're running and what is it that makes you stand out from other people. And the minute you open your mouth and you start talking, people are like, oh my God, where have you been all this time? But you do have to knock on the doors. I know that. And I think the best time right now is after 6 because it's not so hot.
Well, yeah. The heat of the day is very difficult right now.
And for all my candidate friends out there, take your Gatorade with you.
Yeah, exactly.
We actually had a person who was walking once, knocking on doors, and she did faint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
And, you know, having your team work with you is very important as well. I mean, because it's very difficult when you have large neighborhoods that you're trying to...
Yeah, you can't do it all.
Yes, you need a team to help you. And so, you know, thankfully, I do have very good support. And with their help, I know that that I will be reelected in November. And I'm looking forward to serving the city for another 4 years.
You're doing a terrific job right now, based on what we hear from other people with all the stuff you're doing. And you come highly recommended as well from our good friend, Brenda, right?
Oh, thank you.
So what about garnering any endorsements?
Yes, absolutely. I've been very fortunate. My very first endorsement, of course, was was the City of Cocoa Firefighters Local 2416. Then the Florida Benevolent Association, Police Benevolent Association, has endorsed me as well. And I also have the endorsement of the Space Coast Association of Realtors. When your peers endorse you, that is quite a compliment.
Right.
So,
it speaks volumes, doesn't it?
So, yeah, that meant a lot to me. Not that the other two didn't as well, because I support the police and the fire department 100% and their chiefs, and they've both done a remarkable job.
So we just want to remind all listeners who are tuning in today to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, our sit-down in-studio guest today is Jerry Blanco, and she is seeking re-election as a council member in District 4 for the City of Cocoa, and we're speaking with her about all the great things and the vision that she has to lead here in Cocoa.
And by the way, this segment is paid for by the Jerry Blanco campaign, so we wanted to make sure we stated that as well.
That's
for,
right.
For the record.
Well, thank you, Miss Ellen.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Trying to keep us off the, you know, off the radar.
Ellen is the one, you know, behind the scenes that makes the show as successful as it is. We've been on air we're going on 7 years.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
Fun. It's really nice to be with you on Mondays. Yeah. So, Jerry, what is your vision for the City of Cocoa? We've talked about it. I see the difference in the City of Cocoa. I see such beautiful trees, and the roads are great. I see great. I see a lot of buildings. We see there's something going on in Cocoa Village. We were talking about some luxury apartments that are going to be coming up soon. We talked to Brenda about that. What is your vision? What else do you see coming?
Well, I think, like I said earlier, we've made so much progress, and we are on the cutting edge right now, really, of turning the city around and putting everything, you know, all the infrastructure in place. And with the growth and development, we had Hurricane Irma last year, which wiped out our waterfront boardwalk downtown Cocoa Village. But that gives us a chance to start with a clean slate, rebuild the waterfront. We just took over possession of Lee Winter Park from the county. And with that, that gives us the opportunity to, you know, redevelop that area and make the area more inviting for all the residents.
The Riverfront Park is great.
Oh, it's lovely.
I love it, and I love Cocoa Village. But is there any more land that you guys can buy, so maybe put some more parking spaces?
In the Cocoa Village?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we do
I'm hoping that somebody comes up and says, hey, I got some land to sell real cheap to the city of Cocoa just to put up some parking spaces.
I know. We do have some potential properties that we're looking at for parking at this time.
Because that seems to be an issue. I mean,
Absolutely.
Cocoa Village is beautiful, and the shops. I mean, the experience is like, you really feel like you're in a different place, right?
I know.
And a lot of people who want to come on a Friday or Saturday evening, that's the issue, is the parking.
It is. It is. But we, like I said, we do have a couple of properties that we're looking at for potential parking. So that will be something that will be coming in the near future.
Thank God for the Bank of America Bank.
Yes.
Because everybody parks at that parking lot.
That's right. Yes.
That's right.
So what is your district in Cocoa? I mean, where exactly is seat 4? What are your boundaries?
District 4, the boundary is Dixon Boulevard North to Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go east from Michigan to Indian River Drive and then north to High Point, excluding River Heights. River Heights is county. So it's not the largest of the districts as far as land mass goes, but it's a more centrally located district, I think, because, you know, we have Eastern Florida State College, Cocoa High School. You know, we have... Dixon Boulevard, Clear Lake.
Middle school? Is Clear Lake middle
school? Well, it's the educational center now.
Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, those are some main corridors right there, you know, Clear Lake and Dixon. So, but it's an area that, you know, it's an older area, and it's declined over the years. And I feel that it has been, hasn't been developed and we need to take a look at that.
Right.
Yeah, we need to.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, like it's great when we run for office and we walk around the neighborhoods and we see things that need to be changed. But I also often say that people also have to take personal responsibility for their property and where they live as well.
I agree.
You know, a can of paint is not that much. On a Saturday, buy a couple of cans of paint and paint your outside. Get your children involved with maybe planting a kitchen garden. Pick up the debris and pull some weeds. And if you start beautifying your property, then the guy next door will do it. And all you're doing is increasing the value of where you live and how you feel.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people often want government to fix everything or an elected official.
Yeah, they're not coming to paint
your
house.
They're not coming. They're not coming to pull your weeds. They're not coming to fix your garage door. They're not coming to put a little paint on a place on the wall. These are things that us citizens, we can do ourselves. Like, I remember once walking, someone was saying, well, a nurse's aide that I worked with was saying something about Palm Bay, that there was a crack in the pavement. And I said, well, why don't you just write your elected official and say there's a huge crack in the pavement and a child could fall and get hurt? Or if you're riding a bike, you could just trip, right? Oh, well, I why would I do that? It wouldn't make a difference. You didn't even do it, so how do you know it doesn't make a difference?
Right.
Alert someone to the fact that there is a problem, right? That's how you take responsibility for where you live and your community.
I watched a business owner in a city, actually it was in Merritt Island, a business owner went out to a bus stop and actually made the bus stop a little bit nicer for the people that were staying. So, and you're on the board of transportation, that was, right, public transportation?
Space Coast TPO.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, that was just one example, and there's somebody who took the initiative.
We're all in this together, right?
To make it better, and he doesn't take public transportation.
That's right.
You know, just the simple fact that you do something for your neighbor, you do something.
You stay engaged in your community. So, Jerry, what is your website? If someone wants, do you have a website? I'm not sure if you have one yet.
Yes, it's reelectjerryblanco.com.
Yeah, we got to find out because some people haven't had their websites up yet.
Yes, right. Yes.
reelectjerryblanco.com.
Yes.
No, but going back to personal responsibility, that comes not just with your home and your community, but with your own self as well. Look around you. What are your issues? How many children can you afford? I mean, like my daughter says, live the life you can afford, right? And I think if we all start thinking, it's not a Democrat or a Republican issue. It's an issue that you're a human being and you have a right to exist on earth, but do what's right for yourself and your families. And a little thing is helping in your community. You know, we often hear people that says, well, some schools are performing better than some. Look at the parents who take the time to volunteer. Look at the parents. And then you always have to look at the ones who have to work 2 and 3 jobs as well. So it's a whole, you know, it's a circle.
Right.
We have to take care of each other. And I'm so glad you're running for City Council District 4 in COCO, because I think
so
you will make a difference with the people. And any more events coming up that people can see you and talk to you? And
well, you're
and
a realtor, you so you're everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, that,
put up your signs.
That's true.
So if you want to list a house.
Yeah, Ellen, there you go.
But I do have a town hall meeting coming up in October. It'll be October 16th at 6 p.m. at the new Fire Station 1, which is on the corner of Dixon and Clear Lake. That town hall meeting is, you know, it's an opportunity for residents of District 4 and of residents of the city in to come out and meet myself, the other members of council, staff, ask any questions they may have.
But you have food? They all come if you have food.
We can have food.
Maybe
give them a little rules.
Give them something. Yes.
But we typically have a really good turnout at these town hall meetings, and it is a great opportunity for people to just, the residents, just to come out and speak with us. Any questions they have, any concerns, we're happy to discuss it with them and provide you with any information that you may, you know, be requesting at that time as well. I try to provide stats on the district that we're in, of course, you know, like the crime, you know, statistics.
And affordable housing, that seems to be a big one these days with people. I just read an article where minimum wage just don't cut it. We got to increase the minimum wage. You can't find a decent house with working 40 hours a week on minimum wage.
Well, right now, people can't even afford rent.
Yeah, I mean, where would you live?
It's challenging right now.
You would have to have 3 and 4 families living in one house to pay the mortgage or rent, and then they start fighting. Then you go into a different issue because some families just can't live together, right? Oh, but that's another show. We're going to have to do a whole show about it.
Right.
But for our friends who are tuning in, look up Jerry Blanco's website and I like you. I hope people look at you and what you stand for and what you've done so far and give you their vote.
Well, thank
we don't
you, Sita.
Need people in there who are just running because they want to be famous or they want to be on a ballot just
or promote
for
their
reason,
own agenda.
Or promote their own interests and agendas.
Exactly.
And, you know, but we want people who actually care about the community and the people to run and run for office. So, Ellen, I think we've had a really good show today. This was really, really fun. And I like meeting Jerry.
And well, don't
thank
forget
you for having me.
I would like to go to her event. And when I talk about people having children and being responsible, I'm not saying that just because I want to say I am one of 18 children.
Right.
Hence, I do believe in birth control and comprehensive sex education at appropriate ages, as well as academic education, vocational. And, you know, doing an apprentice of some sort. I do believe in education. I think education is the key that changes our world.
Amen.
I wish someone had given my poor mother and father some education at the appropriate time.
So with the last couple of seconds, reelect Jerry Blanco?
Yes.
.com?
Yes.
Okay,
re-elect
fantastic.
ReelectJerryBlanco.com.
We're going to make sure that we post it everywhere. We're going to have a great podcast of this after the show, after today's show. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank
and
you.
And for Thomas Kennedy for calling in. And Sita, once again, great work on getting some fantastic guests and finding us the people that make Brevard County different.
Make Brevard beautiful.
Amen. We'll see
and
you next
Cocoa
week.
And Cocoa beautiful with Jerry Blanco.
Amen.